are you doing?
Hello.
From deep cuts to future classics.
On location and behind the scenes.
Somewhere between reasonable and crazy.
It was no more complicated than that.
Let's skip intro and find out what to watch on Netflix.
Coming up.
You have to also be saying something, I feel like. Being provocative for the sake of it, not for me.
I was getting messages from, like, strangers saying that they liked it. But also, worryingly, people sort of almost taking it as a serious manifesto. And I was like, it is a sketch.
I've got a garden and I haven't got a dog or kids, so I'm having a wonderful time.
I don't believe we've met. What's your name?
I'm Dottie, and welcome to What to Watch on Netflix. During lockdown, some things have trudged along slower than a phone call with a mortgage advisor, while others have flown by in the blink of an eye. This run of What to Watch on Netflix, for example. Despite it surely only starting about 10 days ago, here we are at the end of another run. We've somehow managed to cover what I've calculated as 68.4% of all Netflix shows ever made in just 7 episodes. This means that in this final 8th episode, we've got a whopping 31.6% to smash. Not gonna be a problem, though. This week is all about something we could do with more of at the moment. Laughs. Probably the most subjective genre on our screens, comedy takes many forms. What makes one person wet their undercrackers and gasp for air may well leave everyone else in the room completely cold. Whether it's a stand-up special from a comedy icon, a rerun of 6 very white, very smug New Yorkers in a coffee shop, or an absurd take on what heaven is really like. Making people smile is one of Netflix's most requested actions. So let's get some jokes.
Oh, hello.
Hello, hello.
What's up, guys? How are you?
Thank you. Thank you guys so much.
Let's do this.
First up on this week's metaphorical sofa is someone not afraid of ruffling feathers and winding up moany politicians, celebrities, important people, and Piers Morgan. From her musical comedy roots through to the wildly successful MASH report, Rachel Paris knows just how to kill with kindness, with everyone laughing at the same time. Hello, Rachel.
Hello, mate. How are you?
Good to see you.
Yeah, great to see you. Very excited to be talking about TV, which is my entire life.
Now, seeing as it's the last episode of the season, I've decided to have a little bit of a cabinet reshuffle. Jamie, the producer, has been demoted to transcribing the entire Studio Ghibli archive into Welsh. And Gina Moore Barrett, who you know usually pops up at the end of the show armed with recommendations, has now been bumped up to Queen of the World and is here for the whole damn show. Gina!
It's what I deserve. Thank you so much for having me. Really excited to be here.
We've been putting you through your paces. Everything up to this moment has been a rehearsal.
It's been an audition for sure.
And you passed. Yeah. So welcome to the main stage.
Thank you. I'm so excited. Thanks.
And our final guest is a man who is to UK TV what milk is to cereal. All over it, mate. From his early attempts at nu metal, he rose through the ranks of stand-up comedy before dropping it like a hot stone as soon as TV came calling. From Casualty and Skins, right the way through to runner-up on I'm a Celeb, and now The Masked Singer. What to Watch on Netflix is delighted to welcome someone as fond of a sequin tuxedo as he is an arm tattoo. It's Joel Dommett. Hello.
Hello. What a wonderful intro. I think I'll get you to reread that at my funeral.
I mean, I'm available for work. Let's be honest, you know, who hasn't been furloughed? So I'm available for funerals, holy communions, bar mitzvahs, just
all of the above.
How is everyone, though, in the midst of a pandemic?
Good. Yeah. I mean, I know you're not supposed to say good, but good. It's been fine. I've got a garden and I haven't got a dog or kids, so I'm having a wonderful time.
Look at you.
Yeah, all right.
Bully for you with your garden.
I feel really bad, but I'm sorry for living such a chill life.
Is it a garden or a garden?
It's actually a pretty small garden, but then that's a good thing.
Can you play rounders out there?
Has it got grass in it?
Yeah, I mean, I could literally show it to you now. That's the wonder of Zoom calls. But I'm not sure it works so well on a podcast.
It'll just upset us, Joel, if you show it to us.
I'm honestly, I know that you're supposed to be like, oh, you know, this time's been really difficult mentally. I've been very up and down. The things that made me, sort of help me get through are sort of the wonderful heroes of the NHS. And just sad. But in reality, I'm having the best time of my life.
I hear what you say. In reality, you hate the NHS.
Oh, look, the privilege is just dripping off you, isn't it? Oh, God. Oh, yeah. I've got my land and my white privilege. I'm great. Joel, I'm glad, man.
Seriously, though.
Someone's
very much
got to be having a good time.
That's too late. Too slow.
It's way too late for that. They've really done your impression.
Damn it.
Rachel, Joel hasn't got a care in the world. How's lockdown been for you?
Clearly. It's been fine. It has been, you know, that sort of piss take sentence that he just said, like, that is how I feel. It has been up and down. But it's been all right. We've got two teenagers in the house doing their own thing. They're at school. So at least I'm not at school, you know. It's better than being at school, like as in online school. We haven't really got a garden, but we've got a space outside the front of our house, which we sit in, which really freaks the neighbours out. We sit in like deck chairs. It's nearly
a pavement.
It's a few inches away from the pavement. It's just in front of our window. There's about like half a metre where you can sit, where the sun hits you. And we sit there in like shorts in front of the bins to catch the sun.
Joel's like, can't relate.
Hey, come over my house. We're having an absolutely wonderful time over here.
We've also got a chameleon, which I think we get the chameleon out to sit with us in the deck chairs. And I think it really adds to the white trash element of what's going on there.
You see, there's been something's been lost in translation. It's the comedy episode. We wanted comedians. We fucked it.
I can
Did somebody tell you we wanted chameleons?
Oh, damn it.
Season 3, we'll call you up for the animal special. Gina, hello, darling. How have you been?
Yeah, I'm still alive. That's the main thing, isn't it, really? Still alive.
Got a chameleon? Got a garden?
Got a garden, but have the worst neighbours on earth who only play.
Whoa. They're just... Oh, no.
And they...
Is it Joel?
No, it's not Joel. It's not Joel. Yeah, so staying at home hasn't been great just because they only ever play really loud music and it's only ever dance hall or bashment music just every single day.
Ooh.
Are you sure you don't live next to me?
My kind
that
of
sounds
neighbors.
Very like me. That's totally my vibe. Oh,
yeah,
I love
you,
it. And
you.
There's nothing I love more. Love a bit of bashment.
I don't know what it is.
Bashment is like reggae
dance
hall. Come
on, you'll hear it.
It's genuinely great, actually. It's so good.
That's for another podcast. We'll introduce you to dance hall, Rachel.
Yeah. Please.
It's a whole other series. Guys, the reason I've got you together is to talk all things comedy. So where do we start? How do you define great comedy? What do you think it takes to be considered a great comedian? Have you got like a god tier comedian, someone that you say this is the epitome of comedy?
Well, it's kind of difficult to sort of define in an odd way because everyone likes different things, so everyone laughs at different genres, and so that's why there's such a wide variety of comedians. It's otherwise we'd all be the same. We'd probably all be Jerry Seinfeld, because like he appeals to such a wonderful broad range of people, super funny, absolutely brilliant. But there's also these tiny subsections of really odd people, and that's what's beautiful about Netflix, is that it's brought these little oddities to the entire world, and in reality they wouldn't really get that sort of network to be able to have so many people see their work, like, you know, Rory Scovel and like James Acaster, even like James is like a good friend of mine. And he's odd, man. He is odd, so odd. And the fact that his wonderful comedy can get seen by so many people is just like, it's so brilliant now.
Plug, plug, plug. Beautifully done.
Yeah.
Gina, Joel makes a great point about how abundant comedy is and therefore how difficult it is to kind of pinpoint what makes great comedy. Is there like a god tier comedian for you though? Somebody that you think takes the crown for your taste in comedy? Mine is Eddie Murphy, you see. I think he is top tier, can do it all. Stand up, animated comedy, and can do like situational comedy. Who would you say is that comedian for you? That top tier, ticks all your boxes comedian?
That's that is a really hard question. You know what the difficulty is? I don't have it. I feel like that, you need to give an answer of somebody who's been in the comedy scene for a really long time. But my favorite comedian isn't somebody that's been in the industry for a really long time. So I find it really hard to, especially for my taste at the moment, the person I am at the moment, I find it hard who to say.
Who is it? Cher. It's okay. We won't judge you if they've just been around for 18 months. Who is this newcomer that you love so much?
Yeah.
He doesn't have a special Netflix, but he has been in a Netflix show. It's Chibuki Young White. Do you know who that is?
No.
Okay, I'm introducing. You know how I am when I come on the phone.
Come
I'm
always on, introducing. This is why,
you are.
This is why Gina is key to this podcast.
That's what about, right?
Introducing us to things we weren't aware of. Talk to us, Gina. Who's this?
Chibuki Young White is, oh my gosh, I think he's young, he's like 25. I just think he's one of the best newcomers that I've seen. I just love him so much. His comedy is so hilarious and he's got that really good, because he lives on the internet and so much of his jokes and the pop culture and the things, he has this really interesting take on things that happen from sort of like that millennial perspective that I think is hilarious. And I went to see him maybe like 6 months ago and I laughed so much. I had a stitch. It was so funny. He's really, really talented. And he has a cameo in the film Someone Great that was on Netflix. So if you've seen that and the guy that sells him the weed and is on a hoverboard, that's him. He's really funny. And he's a writer on Big Mouth.
That's Shibuki. Yeah. Oh, see, look at that. Came with his whole IMDb.
Like I'm a massive fan.
That's
Big Mouth as well. Like he's so talented. I would love for him to have a Netflix special.
Is he American or British?
He's American.
Or something else.
Oh yeah. No, he's
Is it the only two things you can be? Is it? No, he's
got
Israeli. He's Israeli, Rachel, all right?
I don't believe it.
So let's be realistic.
he does happen to be American. His family's also Jamaican, which is where my family's from, so slightly biased there, but yeah, really great.
And he writes for Big Mouth. Big Mouth is one of my like big Netflix picks.
Yes,
I love it so much.
Honestly, please look at like so he's funny. So great. I'm acting as if he's my mate. He doesn't know I exist. I just want him to be really famous. I think he's really great.
That's Chibuki.
That's Chibuki.
Oh, if that's not the name of his Netflix special, then
he's missed the trick, hasn't he?
Why is everybody so obsessed with boobs? Ugh, how would you guys like it if girls looked at your dicks all the time?
That'd be awesome.
Nick's penis is comparable to that of a baby.
Ah, why am I out?
Rachel, who makes you laugh until you've got a stitch? Who is that comedian for you?
For me, and I'm surprised I'm saying this, because generally I'm not a huge fan of stand-up, even though I'm a stand-up. I really love sketch and character stuff and sitcoms, and that's what I go to watch more instead of like stand-up special. And sort of historically, like a hero of mine would probably be like top tier would be like Victoria Wood, because I love that she did the songs, the characters she finds, I just think are so funny, and Acorn Antiques and Dinner Ladies, and she made me laugh out loud so much, her like character monologues. But at the moment, John Mulaney has produced so many of my favourite things in terms of, so Big Mouth, which is something that we watch as a whole family with like a 15-year-old girl, a 17-year-old boy, my husband and me, like all find something in that is like really like piss yourself, laugh out loud funny. And his Kid Glorious, we've watched over and over again. I just think it's the most beautiful stand-up special. And obviously he was a writer on SNL. And then I don't know if you've heard Too Much Tuna, which is, I don't even know how to describe
it.
Is anyone Too Much Tuna?
No.
I can't believe, it's such a big part of my life. So it's, there is a special of it, I think, on Netflix, but I think it's called something else. So it's him and Nick Kroll dressed up as old men.
Amazing.
It's so funny.
It's amazing.
And they've now got
so
a podcast
funny.
Of it called Hello.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, hello. And it's just them being these two old men being very weird, and they do interviews with celebrities where they serve them a sandwich with far, far too much tuna in. It sounds weird, and it is, but it's very
funny.
It's
great, isn't it? The variety of his work is insane.
Yeah, he's incredible.
It just feels like he can just do whatever he wants and make it really funny.
And he's got better and better, like watching there's quite a few different stand-up specials on Netflix, aren't there, of his, and I think...
Which one's the Carnegie Hall one? That's so good.
I think that's Kid Glorious. The one with the Trump routine, the horse in the hospital.
Yes.
This is so awkward for me, having not seen it. I'm just like, sorry.
I've not seen it.
Tell me more. But he's so you might... No, carry on. I could talk about it for hours. It's just so funny.
I am a Tony Award viewing actor.
A Netflix comedy special.
Theater is the hot new thing. There's Hamilton and no other examples.
Oh, hello, on Broadway.
It's very Netflix.
Rachel, you've touched on like some real different elements of what makes comedy great. So you get the assuming of a character. You mentioned Victoria Wood as well, when you can be musically funny, you could be funny in monologue. What do you think are the kind of key ingredients? Because of course you can't please everyone. What do you think you need to be though? Is it being a bit weird? Is it being really great and observational? Is it pushing boundaries? What do you think you kind of need in comedy, Joel?
I think it depends, like whatever you want people to get out of it. Like, there's an audience for everyone, I think. And one of my favorite specials that this on Netflix is such a weird one. It's really weirdly quite old now. It's Chelsea Peretti's special. That's it's called One of the Greats, and it's so funny. And Rachel, like you were talking about, like different sketches and stuff like that. There's so many elements to it, and she like her shtick is that like she's got so much confidence, and it's just so funny, but it's also got that element of anti-comedy about it that is like when she'll sort of do jokes and then there'll be like a deal cut to like a dog in the audience just like sort of eating or something, and then they'll like she'll just do another joke and then there's silence in the audience and it'll just go to this guy who's got a leaf blower and he's just blowing leaves in the aisle of the audience in the theater and stuff. It's like really weird and it's so good.
I don't like eating bananas in public. That is so stressful if you're a girl. It's so annoying because it's such a portable, good snack. Like, how do I de-dick this? What you do is you peel it, right? Then you break a piece off, right?
And like Maria Bamford's special that's filmed in her home is just like the weirdest thing you've... Like, what a mad idea.
Maria Bamford's incredibly weird, but I love it. I don't know what's going on ever.
I love her. I saw Maria live in London at the Leicester Square Theatre when she came, and she blew my mind. Like, I've never seen anyone with that style before. Mm. Like, just so kooky, but not in a annoying pixie way. Like, really out there.
Gina, we've spoken a bit about Big Mouth, and I think the reason why it was such a sort of a resounding success and why so many people love it is because if you've been through puberty... Mm. You can find some hilarity in Big Mouth. Do you think there needs to be a little bit of relatability in comedy? I know, for example, Ellen did a comedy special and it got a lot of criticism because people were like, oh, I can't relate to Ellen anymore. Mm. Her jokes are all about being like a multimillionaire and I can't relate to Ellen anymore.
That was kind of the joke of it, though, wasn't it? That was quite clear. In a weird way, that was what she was trying to do. She knew that was going to be the criticism
of it. That was her angle. She kind of tried to, yeah.
Yeah, but it's so hard to do at that point, isn't it? I don't know.
I think it was, I get that it was her intention, but I think a lot of people felt like maybe stand-up and that proximity to the audience doesn't work for an Ellen anymore. Because it feels like stand-up in particular feels like there needs to be some proximity there. Do you think comedy needs to be relatable?
I don't think it does, but the kind of comedy that I like the most is. And I think you're 100% right about that. I hadn't thought about it like that, but you're right. The stand-up comedy for me is so great, especially when I see it live, is so great because not only do you have the physical proximity, but also the proximity and experience where it's like everybody can relate to... that's what I love about observational comedy as well, is like when they retell something that's happened to everyone, but with that razor precision that is like, oh my gosh, yeah, that is actually this mundane thing that I do every day is actually hilarious because they've retold it that way. For me, relatability is really, really important. Or just committing to being really weird. But anything outside of that, it's not my bag. It doesn't have to be, but for me, it does.
Relatability can come in many forms, though. That's the thing, isn't it? It's like you can be Kevin Hart and be one of the richest, well, the richest comedian in the world, and still somehow he kind of makes it weirdly relatable to an everyday household and without it feeling too patronizing, which I think is a real talent of his. I think he's really great.
Yeah, I think some comics use it and it's what they rely on themselves for their style. But I think that not every comic has to have that. Like, I think some of my favorite comics, you know, like Hannah Gadsby, Billy Connolly, I don't share a lot of their experiences. I don't completely, you know, we haven't had the same experiences in life, but I find them hilarious. And it's really, it makes it, the difference actually makes it more funny and more interesting. But then you've got like, whereas what people like Michael McIntyre are doing, and I think there's always room for that, is really relatable stuff that like loads of people can go, oh my God, I've never thought that is me. I've never thought about it that way. But I think if everyone did completely 100% relatable comedy, it would be quite a dry scene.
This is really funny. I was talking to someone, he was doing a gig with McIntyre, and he's got this amazing routine. Like, I love McIntyre. I think he's so good, so good. And he's got this amazing routine about windscreen wipers. You know, that's the kind of thing that McIntyre does, like a 15 minute amazing routine on windscreen wipers. And in his routine, he like goes like this with his arms with the windscreen wipers. And like, he's doing this whole routine about these windscreen wipers. And then like someone turned to me, like one of the other comics goes like, we all know that like only cars over like 80 grand have like windscreen wipers that fold together like that instead of being like that. Like, he's like trying to be relatable, but he's kind of gone past it.
That's such a good spot. That's such that a, good, a spot good spot by your friend. That's amazing.
Do you think, because comedy is kind of rooted in real experience, do you think it's comedy's place to ask difficult questions and tackle prickly issues? A lot of comedians steer clear of it, some sort of dive right into it. What do you think about comedy and contentious topics?
I think comedy's a good place for it, because I think that it's one of the best ways to tackle contentious topics. Because I think you can talk about things a bit freer if you're making people laugh with it, if you're able to make it funny. But I don't think that there should be an obligation on comedians if that's not their style. You know, I would hate to see Reeves and Mortimer tackling massive social issues of the day. That's not what I tune into them for. And I think that there's comics who are so good at that. And I think that's a really fantastic thing. And I think it's whatever suit, because for me, I like to, as far as I can, like, I find it interesting to sort of tap into political, social things. But if that's not your bag, if you're doing more surreal stuff, or even just more sort of day-to-day stuff that isn't as political, I think that's your prerogative. I don't think comedians should have to necessarily.
What do you think, Joel, of contentious issues in comedy?
Yeah, I completely agree, really. It's basically if you do want to tackle those things or not. It is quite an easy, it's quite a good way of sort of taking your career forward when that relatability falls off. I think a lot of people then take the, because you can't anymore talk about like, oh, you know, when I'm on the bus, it's then a good way of sort of gathering your material is to sort of talk about the sort of contentious issues of the day. But like, I personally don't do it because it just doesn't really sit well with my sort of style. And also I feel like there's nothing that I say. I always feel like I'd say the wrong thing. I'm just not good at it. It's like, I'm super scared to like, I feel like I'm not intelligent enough for it, basically.
Do you, I think, yeah, we've kind of been speaking about those matters that feel a bit contentious, or they feel like you're trying to take on current affairs. America feels like it's got a really different relationship with comedy in that it's quite highly politicized a lot of the time. What was that like with the Mash Report success, Rachel? Did you expect that success?
Or? Not at all. Yeah, total surprise, because, you know, this was just going out at 10 o'clock on BBC Two to a quite a modest audience. I believe the first few weeks were below the average viewing figures. But then it was the clips that went online that were kind of suddenly quite successful, very successful all over the world. And we started getting these, you know, millions and millions of hits. And it seemed to, when we were writing it, like the team and me, like I think you you have an idea of what you're doing and you know it makes you laugh and you know it has a point to it. Like the sexual harassment one was certainly of its time and we had a lot of jokes that felt right. But then when people in like really different places all over the world, like every continent, finding humour in that and finding a point in it is astonishing, actually, like really, really surprising. And I was getting messages myself from like strangers like all over the place saying that they liked it. But also worryingly, people sort of almost taking it as a serious manifesto. And I was like, it is a sketch.
Is there anything that you think is out of bounds? I think we've probably all had that moment where a comedian makes a joke and you're like, oh, am I allowed to laugh at that? And it feels like there is an area that only few dare to touch. Do you think that's part of what being a comedian is? And you can touch on anything?
Well, look, I'm not a comedian, right? But I think the thing is, I don't really like comedy that makes me feel like I'm... Any kind of comedy where it's like punching down or makes it feel like I'm laughing at other people, I don't like. So offensive kind of, where the thing is like they are a bit offensive in it, that's not my bag. But I think that's may just be because personally I come from like a demographic in which we've been mocked before. So I'm uncomfortable around the idea that that is going to be the kind of comedy. So I kind of stay away from it.
Yeah.
That's the genuine answer to that. But there's a way to be provocative, but you have to also be saying something, I feel like. And sometimes I feel like being provocative for the sake of it, not for me.
For me, it's like if it's dangerous comedy, if it's pushing an envelope, if it's saying stuff that you perhaps shouldn't, I think it means the jokes have to be better. Like,
yeah.
It's like there has to be a reason for it and there has to be... There's no point in just sort of making any sort of random slurs against people without it sort of coming back to a point where, you know, you're just like, oh my God, that's so incredible. Like, it's like, it has to be better. If it's the more dangerous it is, it has to be better, I think.
Yeah, I think the bar's much higher. I 100% agree with that.
And that's why I don't do any dangerous comedy, because I'm not good enough.
You made some good choices.
I was just going to say, I think it's important to know what laughs you're getting as well. Be aware of what your audience is laughing at, because there are comics that might think they're, oh, I'm a championing free speech and the public love it. Like, this is the reason people are laughing is because I'm speaking the truth. And that's often not true. The reason people are laughing is because they're enjoying sharing in a particular, possibly outdated, possibly bigoted opinion, and people love that. You know, if they feel a bit uncomfortable with their values in normal life and then they come into a room and everyone's laughing around them and they're like, oh my God, I can laugh at this, then yeah, you'll get a laugh. Good for you. But I think know what laugh you're getting and decide for yourself whether you want to own it.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
You make a great point there about outdated laughs. What do you think about old comedy? There's been a lot of this in the news, old comedy, like Fawlty Towers. Having episodes removed because the comedy of that time just doesn't sit in a 2020 more progressive social landscape. Do you think old comedy that is offensive should be yanked off sort of streaming services or from box sets on demand? Or do you think it should just continue to exist as a reminder of how comedy used to be? Joel?
Oh, throw it to me, of course. Of course,
that is a good question, Dottie. Oh my God.
Fine. Give that one to the straight white male.
You plow away with this one, Joel.
With the garden.
I think it's a really interesting subject at the moment. And I think it's obviously just comedy changes and it adapts and everything has changed from here, from 20 years ago, from 10 years ago, from 5 years ago. You know, you're looking at like Little Britain sketches where you just look at it and you're like, instead of getting a laugh off an outdated character, just where you go, ha ha, cool. It's not worth the social injustice in the future. And I think I'd rather have a more sort of a better future where everyone is more inclusive and equal. I'd rather have that than something that's just like on TV that I can laugh at. It's like the balance of it, you know? And I think people that complain about it, fucking get over it. Like, there's other issues at stake that are way more important than laughing at your favorite episode of Fawlty Towers. Like, yeah, there's other things at play, and the other things are way more important than a laugh. It's basically the same as the statues thing. It's like, oh, why are you taking our statues down? Like, why are you doing that? And you're like, get annoyed about something else. Get annoyed about the fact that there's inequality in the world and we're trying to make that better. Why are you annoyed about a statue? Like that statue is not your family. That wasn't your property. That's not like in your garden. Fucking get over it, mate. Like, there's other things to be annoyed about personally. But I just, I don't know whether I'm right or wrong. Put me on the MASH report immediately.
They're not your family. I like that. I'm going to use that. Is it your family? Is Winston Churchill your uncle, mate?
Exactly. Get over it, man. It's fine.
Did you see even, Colston in Bristol, even his great-great-great-great-grandson said on Twitter, well, I'm the last of his line and I say, go for it, put him in the river. So
I'd love to get your Netflix recommendations. And what I really want is a comedy recommendation from Netflix and something completely non-comedy that you've been loving. So, Rachel, hit me.
Okay, my comedy recommendation is a disappointingly short series called Middleditch and Schwartz, which is two guys doing improv. And much as you know, I'm loath to champion straight white men. It's sort of the only pure improv that's up on nearly all TV. And as an improviser,
For the
15 years I've been doing improv, all the improvisers I know go to TV commissioners in the UK and they're like, please put improv on TV. It's really funny. You don't need a weird, wacky format. They always make it into a weird, wacky format. You don't need a weird, wacky format. Just take the improvisers, put them in a theatre and let them do what they do. And that's exactly what Middleditch and Schwartz has done. They've just taken two very, very experienced, very funny men, and they've put them in a theatre for three nights and they've filmed it. And that's all you need, because that's all improv is. And it's funniest when it's pure and let alone without any gimmicks at all. And they're really good. They're really good at it. It's sort of this very free. I think a lot of people are sort of like, in the UK, people know Whose Line Is Anyway, you know, the game format where you get all these suggestions and you do a song and you do props and everything. But they're doing what I'm more familiar with, which is simply you chat to the audience, to one audience member, you get three things from them, and then you go and you just tell a story for 45 minutes. And it's so entertaining. It's really laugh out loud funny. So that's my
incredible
comedy recommendation, improv.
I can't promise you that I can protect you from what's behind that door. Terrible things. Things that will scar you forever. I'm sort of turning Werner Herzog now.
Yeah. And what would be your non-comedy program that you're absolutely loving on Netflix?
Oh my God.
Or do you only consume the comedy?
No, I watch so much other stuff, and a lot of it is like, I hope it's okay to say this, Gina, a lot of it is like trash, but which I love. I love it. I won't have Selling Sunset as my like recommendation.
Oh, strong.
Mate, so good.
Oh my God.
I can't wait for season three.
So good. I know, same. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited.
I'm like, why are you together? Remain doesn't seem to have like a brain at all. Like, and he's clearly awful. Don't marry him. Anyway, I really like Gumbo's Just Desserts.
Oh, strong.
It is Zumbo, right? That's his name. He's this like pastry chef who does these elaborate, incredible desserts. And I love that they've built the program to be as like acid trip colourful as his desserts are. So like the set, the costumes and the personalities of the people they've chosen are so over the top. They've got like people, it's always like people wearing things in their hair and bright dresses and jewels, and like it's so fun. And I love watching the cakes being made, and it makes me very hungry and makes me want to eat more sugar.
Comedy and desserts. You've told us all we need to know about you, Rachel.
This is going to separate the dessert makers from the dessert fakers.
I think he could have put in a bit more work because it doesn't taste very good.
Gina, I need a comedy recommendation from you. And you know, this holds weight, Gina, because we live by your recommendations. So what have you got for us?
If you want a little taster of different comedians, I would say I really like the comedy lineup. It's really great. And there is, I would especially recommend the first episode of season one is Michelle Buteau, who is hilarious. Also has cameos in other Netflix films like Someone Great, Always Be My Maybe, etc. Her 15 minutes is great. Also Phil Wang. Yeah. It's really, 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 really funny. I don't know what it... This is somebody that, to me, when I watch his comedy, it looks as if he is doing an impression of a comedian rather than... It's so funny. Like, he's so uncomfortable, but he's so hilarious. Oh, I love him so much. So I would 100% recommend watching. But all of them, like, yeah, comedy lineup is very good. One of many things that's really good.
My comedy style in three words.
What?
Petrified, electric.
Tall, I'm quite tall.
Jewish Santa does heroin.
Sassy.
Sorry.
Adequate.
Ignorant yet aware. Woo!
Yeah! Boom.
And non-comedy, oh gosh.
I mean, you have given us a lot.
I've given all I can give, honestly.
Do you know what? I think I'll excuse you a non-comedy this week.
Thank you very
because
much.
I mean, you've given us about 14 other things to watch in the past few weeks.
The hill I will die on is that everyone must watch BoJack Horseman. Not a new show, but just watch it. That's it. But that's the hill I'll die on, and that's what I'll leave it there.
Oh, is it this guy?
Oh my God, he's got a gun!
Relax, it's a lighter. How much lighter fluid can I take on the plane? And before you answer, remember, I'm a celebrity.
And Joel, what would be your two recommendations to leave us with?
I tell you what, I watched Nate Bargatze. I think that's how you say his second name. I haven't laughed out loud like that in a really long time. And it just, it's like proper, simple, fun comedy. Like, I really, really enjoyed it.
I tried to, I'm always like trying to lose weight. I had a thing that happened that I do. It was like, I got to get it together. I go to the trunk of my car and I take my shirt off, standing there, no shirt. And this old man walks up and goes, Olivia?
Can you hit us with a non-comedy recommendation before you go?
Yeah, so I'm going to say Selling Sunset.
Go on.
Is it because it reminds you of your own house?
Yes. Yes, it does.
Oh, poor Joel.
That's just a documentary to you.
Oh, it's so great. Oh, I remember the time that I bought it from them. Basically, we watched the first episode and we were like, what is this rubbish? Same. Second episode, I was like, same. It's a little less rubbish. I'm still watching it. And then whole series in, I'm just like so deep looking at all of their Instagram profiles. Same. Be like, oh, that's the guy that she dates.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Absolutely same.
You are all of us, Joel.
Cannot wait.
With real estate, you can't sit around and wait for the phone to ring. You have to hustle.
I'm excited to get back to work. I have a new man, I have a new ring, and I am ready to dominate the market.
Guys, thank you so much for your recommendations and for joining me on this, the final episode in season two of What to Watch on Netflix. Thank you.
Woo,
it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, guys. You can now go off and enjoy your separate lives. That's it, another season done and dusted. Thanks to all our guests over the past couple of months, and thank you for listening. What to Watch on Netflix will be back soon with more recommendations. But until then, adios. What to Watch on Netflix is hosted by me, Dotty, and is written and produced by Jamie East. Editing and additional production comes from Cup and Nuzzle. What are you watching on Netflix? We'd love to know. Get in touch with us on Twitter @NetflixUK.